Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to tell you about SV Pod. It's hosted by Scott Van Pelt alongside Stanford Steve. This podcast brings you high-level sports analysis as well as stories of two dads raising kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate to see and if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 documentary film series presents The Tuck Rule, a documentary that examines one of the most controversial plays in sports history. See the legendary Charles Woodson and Tom Brady discuss, for the first time, the call that changed it all. So watch live February 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Also available the next day on ESPN+. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's my boy Ryan Clark. In this show, we're going to talk about the new lightweight title fight. We're going to tap in. We're going to tap out. We'll also be joined by Michael Chandler. But RC, my man, Joe Burrow had his iced out necklace on, but I saw
you with the TV precision.
I saw you with the TV precision. You saw it? It was nice, dog. Where you got that one from?
You know what's crazy, man? Actually, the boys bought it for me. Some of the guys I trained, man, they got together and they was like, RC, man, you need some ice. I said, say, dog, I'm old. You know what I mean? I'm in my 40s. I didn't have chains. I didn't have chains when I was a young dude playing. He's like, nah, man. He's like, you got to rep the squad. And so the boys got it for me, man, as a gift for my birthday. Ooh. So, you know, Joe Burrow pulled his out. He a boot boy. Like, I'm a boot boy.
Yeah,
I'm a tiger.
Yeah, he is.
So I had to show how we do.
Cool Joe Burrow, man, with his iced out necklace. Like, come, this dude is different. Dude's different.
Bro,
dude is Joe Burrow, absolutely different.
Think about this, bro. He comes to LSU. LSU has no offense. All we do is run the football. None. He revolutionizes who LSU is. Throws 60 touchdowns, wins the Heisman, the greatest college football team of all time. Number one overall pick to Cincinnati. Shreds his knee year one, bro. Shreds it because they don't protect him. They still don't protect him, and he gets them to the Super Bowl. Think about how great that dude truly is.
Hey, absolutely. Dude is an absolute winner. But listen, for as good as Joe Burrow is leading the Bengals to the championship, which sounds so absurd, another guy who's a champion and also is different, Charles Oliveira. And now he has his next assignment as he's going to take on Justin Gaethje down the line. What did you feel initially, right? We kind of thought this was the one that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But once it becomes official, what was your first initial reaction?
That it sounds right, right? It's the right decision for the weight class. Charles Oliveira has more than proven that he's the champion. There is no questions. You can't go back to the beginning of his career and think that he's that same man. And we've also seen Justin Gaethje in the octagon with guys like Dustin Poirier, Khabib Nurmagomedov. But the other thing is, he's fallen short in those times. Mm-hmm. And so to me, is this going to be a different Justin Gaethje? Is this a Justin Gaethje that can overcome Charles Oliveira, who has become a force whenever he steps in there? And so I'm excited to see, does he make the changes, and has he now reached the championship level?
You know what's crazy for me was when I heard it, RC, I started thinking to myself, I knew this was coming. But when Justin Gaethje saying things like, if we don't get the fight, we riot, you start to have a little bit of doubt in the back of your mind if it's something that he has heard from the organization that was saying, maybe it's not going to happen. But now that it's reality, now that it's the thing, I'm so excited because Justin Gaethje is your favorite fighter, Ryan's favorite fighter. He's everybody's favorite fighter because the dude is in absolute wars every single time he steps into the octagon. But in Du Bronx, you have a guy now who is full of confidence, who has all the skills. And honestly, after the Michael Chandler fight, you know, you go, well, he was about to get beat, and then he come back and he knocked him out. But I think in the Poirier fight, you truly saw who Du Bronx is, and I believe that fight will even give him more confidence going into the Gaethje fight. Because remember Dustin and Justin, they went, I mean, it was a blood and guts war until Dustin finished him. So Charles Oliveira has to find confidence in that as he heads into this title fight.
DC, you know, you understand the actual styles a little bit more than me, and you know how they'll match up. After seeing Du Bronx against a guy like Dustin Poirier, and even a Michael Chandler, who we've seen Justin Gaethje fight both of these men as well, how do you see this fight actually playing out from a skill set perspective?
You know what's crazy, man, is Justin Gaethje has the ultimate equalizer. He can knock anybody silly. He can knock anybody out. He's got great leg kicks. He's an all-American wrestler, but he never uses it. He only uses it in reverse to stay upright because he's such a savage. Now, this is my disclaimer. Justin Gaethje is my friend. I like spending time with Justin Gaethje. So I'm telling you as a friend that he is a fantastic fighter. He can win the fight. But when you look at skill for skill, you feel like Charles Oliveira is the guy that has more tools at his disposal because he has the jiu-jitsu. He has the willingness to take the fight to the ground because of that jiu-jitsu. And now he has developed stand-up at a level that is on par with anyone in the lightweight division. Now, Gaethje, what he has done has been massively impressive. But Charles Oliveira, man, he gets knocked down, RC, and the dude just gets up and starts stalking like the Terminator. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. He doesn't take his foot off the gas. And I think that is what has caused guys so many issues over the course of this title run.
DC, when you look at these two guys, and I've heard you say a lot when talking about great wrestlers that certain individuals are great wrestlers and they don't use it. But in explaining why you like people could like Charles Oliveira, you talked about the multiplicity, right, or the versatility of his skill set, the willingness to use his jiu-jitsu. Obviously, now being a guy who's great at the stand-up, too, and keeps coming, do you think the wrestling is something Justin Gaethje can go to in this fight against a guy like Charles Oliveira? Or you think he's going to understand, you know what, I'm going to stay on my feet, I'm going to make this a war, I'm going to make this a brawl, and see if I can bring back some of those old feelings Charles Oliveira has, much like Juliana Pena did against Amanda Nunes.
You know what's crazy, Ryan, is that you believe that it's always in that person, that ability to check out. But what we've seen in DuBronx is that he is not willing to go back to that place. I don't know what he has done in his mind that doesn't allow for him to go, oh my God, this is familiar. I don't like this. I'm fatigued. I'm going to go home and I'll get him the next time. This dude's won like 12 fights in a row now. He doesn't lose anymore. Something has changed within him that doesn't allow for him to really look for a way out. Now, Justin does have the wrestling advantage. But who wants to grapple with Charles Oliveira? This is the greatest submission specialist.
You're submitted. In UFC
history, right? Like, so it's like you really got to pick your poison when it comes to the approach that you're taking against DuBronx. Man, look, this fight was supposed to happen in Brazil. I don't know if it's going to happen anymore. But could you imagine if they somehow managed to make Charles Oliveira defend this title? Brazilian fans are out of their mind, Ryan Clark. I have been in the ring thinking to myself, like, nope, you won't make it out of here if you don't, if you win and act like Kobe Covington did after he beat Damian Knight. Bro, the environments there are insane. I don't know if it'll happen there, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But this is a great fight between the two best lightweights in the world right now, not named Islam Makhachev. Not named Islam Makhachev. No, I'm just saying, right, these are the two, Doug, I'm not saying, these are the two best lightweights in the world. In the world, Ryan, not named Islam Makhachev. It is what it is.
Moving on.
Sorry,
moving on.
I just got to tell you the truth.
Somehow we got to Islam Makhachev, and he's nowhere in the rundown, even though neither one of us have printed it, and we're waiting on Corporate Jake to tell us what we need. Speaking of telling us what we need, though, Dana White said that Tony Ferguson, Michael Chandler is the fight that they're eyeing next. It's the fight that they want to make. This is a strange one to me, DC, because in Tony Ferguson, right, you have a dude that went on, what, a double-digit, what, 12-fight win streak.
Yep, 12-fight winning streak, interim champion.
And then you got Michael Chandler, who comes in, he wins one fight, and he gets a chance to fight for the belt. And now you got two of the most exciting guys in the UFC, Tony Ferguson, who has shown us that his toughness and his pain threshold may be different than anyone who is fighting in the UFC right now. Are you excited about this fight? Is this the right time to make this fight?
You know what's crazy? Tony Ferguson won 12 fights in a row, became the interim champ. The week he was supposed to fight Khabib, he goes to do media at Fox, trips over a wire, and tears his knee. So he never gets the Khabib fight. They were scheduled to fight four or five times. That dude trips on a wire, tears his knee up. Habib ends up fighting Ally Aquinta. Now Habib's gone. Now Tony has lost fights in a row. The Justin Gaethje fight showed that time was starting to catch up with Tony Ferguson. Yes. But yep. Has anyone come into the organization and had bigger fights than Michael Chandler? I mean, Michael Chandler has somehow managed to fight Dan Hooker in Abu Dhabi, knock him out and make a massive, explosive. Then you have him fight for the belt against Charles Oliveira, lose that fight, get a fight of the year against Justin Gaethje, and now he gets Tony Ferguson. Nobody has done what Michael Chandler has done. And not only is it based on his fighting style, Ryan, he grabbed that microphone afterwards, and he did the whole Ric Flair thing. Beat me, Flair, if you can. Like, it's like you have to take advantage of your moments, and no one watches more than right after that fight. Those post-fight interviews, you're seen by more people than ever. Chandler took advantage, and now he finds himself in the octagon against another guy that held a portion of the UFC championship. It's massive.
Well, one thing is this. He's the second most likable person that's ever fought in the UFC behind Daniel Cormier. Straight up. Like, he's a dude. Like, I follow Michael Chandler on social medias just to love on him, just because I enjoy watching him live life. And he's kind of translated that into getting these huge fights in the UFC. But he comes over, right? He's the former champ of another organization, and he gets in explosive fashion. But he has lost two fights in a row, DC. And so for me, when you have him losing two fights, obviously Tony Ferguson, I think he's lost to, you know, Charles Oliveira. He's lost to Daniil Dariush. And so
Charles,
we've seen
Dariush.
Him.
Dariush. He lost to Benil Dariush. He lost to Chandler. Gaethje. He lost to Gaethje. Yeah, he's lost like four in a row now.
Right. And so now these two guys, even though exciting, even though beloved by the UFC, this is the fight both men have to win. And I think having a situation to where a Michael Chandler and a Tony Ferguson are desperate, like, that lines up to give us an explosive night just in itself. But I do believe Michael Chandler knows this isn't Justin Gaethje. This isn't Madison Square Garden. I can't go into that fight the exact same way, because now I'm fighting to continue to be a contender, not just being a guy who people love and want to come to the arena to see fight.
But also, Ryan, I feel like this is the right type of matchup. Because when you get Oliveira, you get Gaethje back-to-back, these are championship-level fighters. And I understand that Chandler has championship aspirations. But after a couple losses, you got to take a step back. And the Tony Ferguson today, at 37 years old, on the losing streak as he is not those guys anymore. So with a big performance, it could put him back right on path to where he wants to go. Now, obviously, those guys are drawing back and forth online, as they always do. There are a lot of dangers in the Tony Ferguson fight. He's very tricky with his elbows. He's got slick jiu-jitsu, and he's got cardio for days. But he has not won. The one thing that Tony has done, though, is taken some time away since his last loss. So maybe he'll come back refreshed in a better state of mind for the Chandler fight. But this is a great matchup for Chandler, at least in my opinion. But no one knows that better than Michael Chandler, and he's about to join us right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we have had this dude on so much that is DC, RC, and MC, as we are joined now by Iron Mike, Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler, what's up, my friend?
I like the sound of that, man. DC, RC, MC. Man, I'm doing good. Living the dream. Excited to keep on living the dream and get after it here in 2022.
I mean, we might as well be Run DMC. You know what I'm saying? Because you saw that. Now, Mike, you have come into the UFC and you have had massive fights. And now we have just learned that the next one is going to be another big one, because I'm hearing you're fighting Tony Ferguson next.
Hey, man, I said it from the very beginning. I wasn't going to be here for a long time. I was going to be here for a good time. I didn't come in to tiptoe around to the top 10, top 20. I wanted to come in right away and prove that either I am who I say I am, or I'm not. It still remains to be seen whether or not people think I am who I say I am. I know who I am. I'm having a blast. I love being signed with the UFC. It is just now been a year and 7 days after my UFC debut. It seems like it's been much longer, but what a great year we had. Couple year end awards. So having a blast, man. I think this year is going to be a big one as well.
You know, Mike, you speak about time and time spent inside the UFC. After the fight in November, you said you're going to take some time away. Is this in line with what you thought, or are you coming back a little sooner because this is the fight that was presented to you?
You know, yeah, it still remains to be seen. Not exactly sure. You know, nothing is signed yet. Obviously, Tony Ferguson is an exciting opponent. He's got a huge following. I have quickly become one of the guys that people love to see fighting inside of the UFC octagon. It's a fight that excites me. It's a fight that's scary. It's a fight that's going to be a great fight for the fans once again, and that's what I want to do. I did want to probably come back in, you know, mid to late summer just to give myself a little bit more time off. But hey, man, when opportunity comes your way, you say yes, and that's what I've done since day one coming into the UFC. I've said yes to every single opportunity, and it's boded well and worked out very well thus far. So we're going to keep the train rolling.
Mike, so you come to the UFC, bro, and you are a Bellator champion. You fight Dan Hooker. It's explosive. You knock him out in the first round. Then you get Charles Oliveira and Justin Gaethje, both extremely exciting fights, but you lost both of those fights. And fighting a guy like Tony Ferguson, what do you think you have to prove in a sense of being able to win some of these exciting fights against the top-level elite athletes in the UFC?
It's a great question, and obviously that's where any criticism has come. You know, you come into the UFC, I am 1-2 in the UFC, albeit they were great fights, fan-friendly fights. I was a gnat's eyelash away from becoming the UFC champion, almost knocking out Charles Oliveira, then getting clipped. Being in a fight of the year, back-and-forth battle with Justin Gaethje, probably the scariest guy in the division. You know, for me, I just need to keep being myself, do exactly what I have done since day one when I stepped inside of mixed martial arts competition, use my skill set, continue to hone it in. I got a great, great stable of training partners and teammates and coaches down at Sanford MMA down in Florida. Excited. I'm chomping at the bit to get back down with those guys and be around them and feel the atmosphere there and continue to hone my skills and get better. But yeah, I need to win. You know, that's what the sport is all about. If I say I want to come in and become champion, I got to win fights. So although I have been dubbed as one of the most exciting guys in the sport as of right now, I need to go out there and get a W, get my hand raised. And I think Tony Ferguson's the perfect opponent to add a little bit of entertainment as well as go out there and get a W.
You know, you beat Tony Ferguson, a former interim champion. You put yourself right back into the title picture. Maybe not as a number one contender, but you're in the picture. A picture that is now becoming more clear because now we have Justin Gaethje and Charles Oliveira scheduled.
Yeah.
A guy that's fought both of them. How do you see that fight going? And who would you favor as this matchup comes to fruition?
It's crazy. I think a lot of people would agree with me when I say that I would not have given Charles Oliveira a chance to beat Justin Gaethje up until about the last 12 months. Charles Oliveira has come back essentially from the dead, resurrected his career from the dead. He was spotty up and down, could never be relied upon when it come to performances. And then just the way that he is turned into a deadly striker, as well as one of the greatest submission artists that the sport has ever seen, as well as going out there and finishing myself, going out there and finishing Dustin Poirier. That kind of stuff comes with a little bit of added extra confidence with each time he steps inside of the octagon. I think he's going to be the most confident Charles Oliveira that we have ever seen after the year of 2021 that we just saw in him gaining that title and then defending that title when he steps inside the octagon against Justin Gaethje. But Justin Gaethje, as we all know, he is a killer. I think it's going to be an extremely exciting fight. I think I give the edge to Charles Oliveira, to be honest with you. He just has too many tools, and we all know how Justin Gaethje can win. And we have also proven, and Charles Oliveira has also proven a lot of us and a lot of the doubters wrong, that he can't be in there in those wars. He's a lot tougher and a lot more resilient than we thought he was. So it remains to be seen. May 7th, I believe it is, for them. So I'm excited, and maybe I'll be on the card with them. We'll see.
Mike, you know, you look at what you've been able to do and talking about Charles Oliveira and Justin Gaethje, to the two guys that you fought in your latest two fights. If you win this fight with Tony Ferguson and you fight at the elite level that you can, where do you feel you place in the lightweight division?
It's always tough. I mean, regardless of organization, us fighters are never really in control of our destiny. We have promoters that we work for, and especially when you get to the level of the UFC, these guys are geniuses. They know how to put together fights, and they want to put together fights that make the most sense. Now, with that being said, do I think I automatically make myself the number one contender by beating Tony Ferguson or winning my next fight? I don't think so under normal circumstances, but these are not normal circumstances. I think everybody wants to see a rematch of myself and Charles Oliveira. They definitely want to see a rematch chapter two of the fight of the fight of the year against myself and Justin Gaethje. So I've kind of put myself in a unique position where I could be one win away and I get the nod to go out there and win the title by the end of 2022. If I got to fight three more fights to get back to the title, that's what I'm going to do. Either way, everybody's on notice now. When I step inside the UFC octagon and I strap on those gloves and I bite down that mouthpiece, you're going to be on the edge of your seat. You're going to buy the pay-per-view and we're going to have a blast.
Yeah. Chandler, very rarely does a guy come to the UFC and he is as distinguished as you were in Bellator, champion and everything else. But it's almost like that was a lifetime ago because you have made such an impact so early. Yeah. So when you look back on the first 12 months of your career, is it everything you expected and more, or has it just been exactly what you thought it would be?
No, you're right, and it's true in the what have you done for me lately business. You're only as hyped and important as your last fight was, but you know, it does seem like a lifetime ago. And I think even for the fans who have now followed this journey over the last 16 months that I've been signed with the organization, it does seem like so long ago that I came into the UFC. We're just a little over a year past my UFC debut. So it's just a testament to not just mixed martial arts, not just athletics, but any time in life, any season of life, we underestimate how much ground can be gained, how big of a platform you can build and the impact you can make in such a short amount of time, given the right set of circumstances, continuing to work hard and do the right things. And that's what I've tried to do since day one. And yeah, just three fights in, I feel like I'm still scratching at the doors of that UFC title. And man, it's been a blast. It's definitely exceeded my expectations. I never would have thought in a million years the platform would be this big, the support would be this much, and I would be I'm literally living the dream. I felt like I've been living the dream since 2009 when I got into the sport. I love being a professional athlete, but now coming over to the UFC, being on the world's biggest stage of mixed martial arts, it's everything I could have ever dreamed of and even more. So I'm excited that this is going to be a big, big year, and the train ain't slowing down anytime soon. I got a lot of tread left on the tires, and I got UFC gold in my future.
Yes, Michael sir. Chandler, you are the absolute man, my friend. Ryan, you know how we always talk about how perfect Chandler is? He's got the perfect family. Oh, you should see this perfect, dude's bro. Living room. Hey, you should see this dude's living room, Ryan. This dude's living room. Perfect.
DC, my dream is this summer to go work out with Michael Chandler and film it. So I'll let you know. Yeah. Maybe he'll let me close to the living room.
See, you need to do that. See, one thing I realized, I got this little makeshift wannabe studio over here. I'm building a studio in my backyard with a home gym in my backyard. We can film all kinds of stuff. And yes, I took it to heart, and I was very embarrassed when DC kept talking about how awesome my living room is. So I came over here upstairs. I put myself in the corner, of the extra bedroom / office just to make sure DC didn't talk about all the money I'm making.
Hey, let me tell you something. Nobody put the baby in the corner. Rich. Yeah. Hey, this dude exactly. Is rich. This boy got a rich living room. Hey, Chandler, thank you, my man, for joining us.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate you giving us a few minutes.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. I appreciate y'all. I'll see you.
There he was, Iron Michael Chandler, man. Dude has another big fight on the horizon. And as always, dude brings the energy. Very smart, articulate. And it was good that he joined us. Now, Ryan, from one guy that fought for the belt to the heavyweight champion of the world, Francis Ngannou. Francis is going under the knife. He's having surgery. Mm-hmm. We understand that he's out of contract. 9 months, he'll be on the shelf. What does that mean for Francis? And do you think that it hurts his place in terms of negotiations, being away and not able to compete?
You know what? I don't think it hurts his negotiations because it seems that Dana White and the UFC don't really run their negotiations based on the athlete. Right. And what the athlete is doing or where he is. I think for Francis Ngannou, it may help him in the sense that we get to see what the heavyweight class is without him. What guys now ascend to the top, you know, if it's Stipe, if it's Derek Lewis, if it's still Cyril Gane, you know, these are all guys that Francis Ngannou has fought already. And we've seen Derek Lewis lose to Cyril Gane. And so maybe it shows that Francis Ngannou is needed in this division, that Francis Ngannou truly is at this point. The greatest, the best in the world, the baddest man in the world. But for me, DC, and I know this is one of your favorite topics, what does it mean for the Stipes to you? What does it mean to the Curtis Blades, to the Cyril Gons, even the John Joneses, who we've now learned, at least through Francis, is finding better fights on Twitter than he is in the Octagon?
You know, seeing that, I mean, Francis has ACL and MCL, Ryan. So to do what he did back in Anaheim is even more impressive. To go out there and beat a surreal guy over the course of five rounds with no ligaments in your knee, with both of them torn.
It almost reminds me a little bit of what I felt about, I don't mean to cut you off, but it reminds me of what I thought of Thiago Santos after the Jones fight.
Yep, and he was able to go five rounds. But ultimately, Francis took it another level and won the fight. So hats off to the champ for getting through what he had to get through with those serious injuries and doing it in a way that no one expected. Now, when you turn the page and you look at the injury, does it hurt Francis? I don't think so. I really do believe that this negotiation will tell you what the max contract is for anyone not named Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and those types of guys. Because now you have the heavyweight champion of the world with no contract. And in a hard negotiation with the UFC. Look, I hope they come to terms. Because I, dude, the way it feels when Francis is about to fight, it's like nothing else. Because you don't know if he's going to decapitate somebody. Now you got to wonder if he's going to wrestle somebody. Like, you don't know what's going to happen when Ngannou fights. But what he will know when he gets back is who is going to be in line to fight him. I think we'll see another interim title. And for me, what makes sense for that interim title is Stipe Miocic and John Jones. I think you put those two together, and then no matter who wins, when Francis comes back, you have a massive fight waiting for him.
Yeah, I think that's to me the next step in not only the negotiations, but in the planning for the UFC. It's so crazy. During one of our breaks, we were talking about WWE storytelling. And Dana White's going to have to do a little bit of storytelling here while Francis Ngannou heals up, because we have been waiting on Jon Jones. There's anticipation to see what he will be like at the heavyweight in the heavyweight division. And you have a guy like Stipe Miocic who really isn't getting the respect you would think a former champ or the greatest heavyweight champ in UFC history should get. That's a massive fight to make. And if you make that fight, the winner of that immediately becomes the number one contender. And even if Francis is out for an extended period of time, when a guy like Ciryl Gane, who was 10-0, loses to Francis Ngannou, the hopes are that he continues to progress, that he continues to get better, and he fights for a championship again. So that's a fight with Stipe or the winner of John Jones. You can have that for an interim title. Now someone else walks in with the belt. Or do you think the fear of Ciryl Gane beating one of those two men would make you hold that fight off to not have that rematch immediately between Ciryl and Francis Ngannou?
I just saw that Curtis Blaydes called out Ciryl Gane. Well, yes. Of course you did, Curtis. You're the best wrestler in the division. And we saw Francis.
You just saw Francis.
Right? So it's like, he's like, yo, I want to fight Ciryl Gane. Nobody was calling out Ciryl Gane before this fight. But if I know Fernand Lopez and I know Ciryl Gane, I know that they'll work on that. And I also know and understand that you said something last week. You said Ciryl Gane probably didn't wrestle the whole time because he never expected Francis to shoot on him. Well, he will expect takedowns from those guys, so he will be better prepared for the wrestling. With Miocic, I think it's time to give him some respect and put him in a...
Yes.
If there's going to be an interim title, they can't not do it with Miocic again. Now, I'll be honest with you, Ryan. I heard some rumors, and I will say it this time, about Miocic and everything in Ohio with his team. Very tight-knit team that I hope everything is still going in the right way. But if Stipe Miocic fights anyone, he's as tough, he's as durable, and he is as good as anybody in the heavyweight division. Mm-hmm. Him and John Jones, that was a fight people were pining for whenever John Jones was the champion and Stipe was the champion. So now you make that for the interim title fight, and you also allow for people to see whether or not John Jones can compete at 265 pounds. The reality is this, though. If John Jones fights at heavyweight, you want a belt on the line. You don't want him just fighting. I used to think that, oh, put him against Curtis Blaydes or somebody else. No. You put him in the fight where if he wins, the end visual is a belt getting strapped on him, even if it's an interim title, because then it just elevates the next fight. So I think Stipe Jones is the fight to make, and I can see a world where Ciryl Gane fights against Curtis Blaydes. The heavyweight division is interesting right now, and the champion being away really doesn't hurt it all that much.
It's extremely interesting, and I think another point with the John Jones having a belt on the line when he fights is this. You don't want to waste a John Jones outing from a money perspective. If John Jones fights Curtis Blaydes, it'll be a deal, right? People will pay attention to it. But if he loses that, then you never get the Stipe fight with the interim belt on the line, a Ciryl Gane fight, a Francis Ngannou fight, because now the mystique of John Jones has gone away.
At heavyweight has been seen. And that's the biggest thing about Jones at heavyweight, Ryan, is that it's always wondering, what if? I mean, this has been what if since 2012. What if Jones fights at heavyweight? You don't want to waste that what if and give an answer to what would happen without the gold or some portion of the gold on the line at the end of it. It's too risky. It's just too risky, especially with the way he looked in his last couple fights, RC, and going up in weight.
No, I totally agree. I think the last couple of fights did look like a little bit of boredom to me, and you can't be bored in your sport. But I definitely believe that we need to see John Jones immediately, especially with Francis Ngannou out.
One question. I want to ask you that. You said it looked like boredom. Do you think that Dominic Reyes and Thiago Santos didn't excite him? Is that why you thought that he fought the way that he did? Or do you think that those guys' skill sets? Because honestly, I never said it publicly, Ryan, but I feel like Jones always elevated for the competition. And when you feel the threat, it's easier, right? I bet it was hard for you to get up to go and play against the Jets or the Browns at the time, right? Like, I kind of feel like maybe the threat wasn't as prevalent to Jones, and that's why he didn't fight as well in those last couple fights. But at heavyweight, the threats are really real, and maybe we'll see a better version than we've ever seen.
Right. You know, that's what I'm hoping. But listen, we gave the fans an opportunity to ask us some questions. And, you know, we can't have a show without Corporate Jake anyway. So, Corporate Jake, shoot us a couple of the questions, bro.
All right, guys. This comes from Austin Collette. Obviously, Israel Adesanya headlines next weekend's pay-per-view. So, is Izzy Stylebender the middleweight GOAT if he beats Whitaker at 271? If not, what more does he need to do?
No. Dude, Anderson Silva existed. Like, I don't get this. Like, I don't get this, like, recency bias that fans have. Guys, you can't just honestly, RC, I think the word GOAT gets thrown around way too easy in fight sports. You got to really – the only person that doesn't get passed is Muhammad Ali. And there have been really impressive fighters – but people recognize what Muhammad Ali was. Anderson Silva was to MMA what Muhammad Ali was to boxing.
Yes.
No. Izzy has some work to do to catch Anderson.
Listen, we just saw the GOAT of football retire, Tom Brady. Tom Brady finally hung him up, and he set a different standard for what it means to be a winner at the quarterback position in football. I feel like Anderson Silva set that standard in MMA. You can look at the fights that ended his career, right? I think it was Uriah Hall, Israel Adesanya. The way that these fighters reacted after their fight or even before their fight with Anderson Silva, the number of people that he was a idol to, that followed his career to try to emulate him in their own, tells you all you need to know about Anderson Silva and what he meant to the MMA world and to the UFC.
Ryan, I looked across the octagon, and I knew that I was fighting Anderson at UFC 200. And then we did the staring out for the win, and I was like, wow, I'm fighting Anderson Silva. I was like, holy shit, that's Anderson Silva. It was like the levels just kept going up in terms of appreciation for who he was to the sport of MMA. Anderson Silva is the MMA mixed martial arts GOAT at 185. It'll be a long time before someone passes him. Corporate Jake.
Rob Gomez has a two-parter. DC first. What's next for Usman? Does he clean up the division again, or can the bond be broken temporarily between Adesanya and Usman so they can fight at middleweight? Then, RC, who's the most exciting fighter in the UFC right now, in your opinion?
It doesn't seem like anybody's going to get Usman, honestly. But I think Leon Edwards is next, and rightfully so. Thank God. Give Rocky his title fight. The guy deserves it. He hasn't lost in 10 or 11 fights. Leon Edwards will fight Usman. I don't know if he'll be able to get him, but I do know that he presents unique challenges to Kamaru Usman. The only thing that makes me pause was seeing Nate hurt him at the end of that fight after he had Cruz for so long. Yeah. Not because I don't think he can take a shot, but because if you can do that well for 24 minutes, to have that lull in the mental, Usman never has that. Usman's locked in from minute one to minute 25, and you can't make mistakes. But, yeah, it'll be tough to beat Usman.
So the most exciting fighter, I think, is a very tough question because it's such a personal opinion. Right. And the most exciting fighter to me is Max Blessed Holloway. I think I never watch one of his fights and don't expect action. Now, it all depends on what the other guy wants to do. Right. If you're fighting Alexander Volkanovski and he's willing to stand there and trade, then you get an amazing fight between two of the elites. Right. And if it's Brian Ortega and he absolutely dominates him, then you get an amazing fight from Max where he just overwhelms people with volume. We saw the same thing with Calvin Kattar. You even saw it to me with Yair Rodriguez, and it was even better because Yair made Max dig into his bag and do something different. And so every time I see Max Holloway step into the octagon, I already know you can expect explosion, you can expect volume, you can expect pressure, and if his opponent isn't willing, then he's just going to get overwhelmed.
You know what's crazy? I was like kind of going like shaking my head like, gosh, I was not going to say Max. And then for all the reasons that you said, I completely agree, man. The dude is a genius inside the octagon the way that he fights.
He really is.
Corporal Jake,
and I love the fact that he takes you to task all the time as well.
I was actually trying to say him because I don't want him mad at me no more.
J-Ru asks, is Nick Diaz still a viable threat in the welterweight division with a full preparation and a full camp?
RC, you can have
I'll go
this
first. One. I'll go first. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. he isn't. And I think when you look at the welterweight division and the people who are sitting atop of it, right? When you look at guys like Kamaru Usman, you look at guys like, you know, Colby Covington, Leon Edwards, it's just there's too much talent and too much youth at the top of it. And so is Nick Diaz one of the more exciting fighters of his era? Is he a guy who's built a legacy and who's basically a legend, even after not fighting, I think, since, like, you know, what was it, 2015 until he fights Robbie Lawler?
Yeah, it was a long time.
I just believe at some point the game passes you by. We all age out. And I think Nick Diaz has aged out of being a contender in the division, but he's definitely somebody with a full camp who I do believe can return to being an exciting fighter to watch.
Yeah, people will always tune in, but RC, you know, man, Father Time is undefeated. And
undefeated.
If you're training hard every day and preparing, even as you age, that time still starts to catch up to you. And I think that's what happened to Nick, right? Nick took some time away. Maybe he wasn't preparing himself every day for his return, then he came back. I think those days of being a contender are done. But I do believe that he can still be an attraction. And nothing's wrong with being an attraction as you get older. But I don't even know. After his last fight, Dana said something like, I don't know if he should fight again. Right? So I don't even know what the willingness to put him back in there would be right now. But I would be excited about it. I mean, I know how I felt before he went. But the days of contendership, they're done for Nick Diaz.
Yep.
All right, guys. Our next question comes from Anthony. Do you guys think Sean O'Malley will be a champion soon?
That's a tough one because it's such a tough weight class. And
yes,
I think that Sean O'Malley has a good skill set to be a champion. I think Sean O'Malley's big. I think he has unbelievable striking, and I know that he has great jiu-jitsu. The question to me is, how does he do as he gets into the elite of the elite? Because we just haven't really seen that.
Right.
Do I think he has potential to be champ? Absolutely. But so many things have to go right to win a championship. And I think that's what people misunderstand, Ryan. It's like you got a guy like Tom Brady that won 7 Super Bowls. You know how many things have to go right in order to win one Super Bowl or to win one UFC championship. So many things have to go right. I mean, one left turn opposed to one right turn, and you're number 10 again. So it's a hard question, but he does have potential to be champ. I don't know if it'll happen, though.
Yeah, I think the other thing about Sean O'Malley that's so exciting is even in his one loss, it almost seemed fluky, right? It almost seemed it wasn't like, okay, he went out there and got dominated. And so we haven't had that picture of Sean O'Malley losing, and he has such great lift, such patient striking was what struck me the last time he was in the octagon. So accurate, so efficient, and he has one punch knockout power, which I think is a thing that's elusive when it comes to MMA and in the UFC. And so he definitely has the skill set to get there, but we just haven't seen him in there with the level of fighter you have to beat in order to win a championship. And so it's one of those things. It's not to say he can't do it given the opportunity, but it's what does the path look like? How many elite top level fighters do you have to knock down before you get a shot at the champion? Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see him in like a Corey Sandhagen, somebody like tall like him that presents him those unique challenges and see how he gets through those types of situations. But kid is a ball of potential, and he does have a ton of ability. But
you
also got to
remember,
RC.
You got to remember that Piotr Jan is sitting at the top of that division, and we've watched him.
Good.
We've watched him diagnose, figure out, and pick apart people with a physicality that is often unmatched by someone his size. And we always have to remember that who's at the top of those divisions.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, one more. At Whiskey 805 asks, yo, DC, why are you always backing Jimmy G? Have you not been watching enough football to know that he's just a solid backup?
Hey, let me tell you something, man. I live in the Bay Area, right? So for years, they were trying to run this dude, Jimmy G, out of San Francisco. Here's the thing, RC. I understand that the guy doesn't win, but the guy has been to the NFC Championship. The guy has been to the Super Bowl. And very rarely is Jimmy Garoppolo healthy. In the years that he's played through an entire year, the San Francisco 49ers have seen a really high level of success. Now, is that enough? Guess not in San Francisco, but there are 28 teams at minimum that are willing to take a Jimmy Garoppolo that can take you to an NFC championship and a Super Bowl in one of the very few years that he has actually been healthy. So, yes, maybe, dude, that throw last weekend at the end where he tried to flick that interception, he made a Jimmy Garoppolo play in the worst possible time. But dude had absolutely no protection on those last couple drives. It was insane to watch how easy the Rams got to Garoppolo at the end of the game.
DC, I think one of the worst things you could say about a quarterback is hopefully he doesn't have to throw the football. That's sometimes how you feel with Jimmy G. I'll say this, Terry Bradshaw has a saying that I think fits Jimmy G correctly. And he said, you can lose with me, but you cannot win without me. This has been very true. This has been very true for the San Francisco 49ers. Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers record when Jimmy G plays as compared to when he doesn't are very, very, very stark in their differences, right? Like you win a ton with Jimmy G and you lose a lot when he's not there. And though you may not feel he's the reason they win, he certainly is so high of an upgrade over his backups that you have to respect the man's record as the starting quarterback of San Francisco. With all that said, they need a new quarterback. You're welcome.
They need a new quarterback. And then, to you, my friend, I defer. If you say I will – now I will never publicly defend Garoppolo again because my boy RC says it's time for him to go.
Hey, you can defend him, but I'm going to tap out on it. Matter of fact, Corporate Drake, let's just slide right in to tap in and tap out.
Saturday night, guys. Rashad Evans returned to competition at Habib's Eagle FC event. Evans showed some rust, but eventually won the unanimous decision. So, after knocking the rust off at age 42, RC, tap in or tap out, seeing Rashad continuing his MMA comeback?
You know, it wasn't necessarily a fight that I thought I saw vintage Rashad, which you wouldn't, right? Obviously, he hasn't fought in a ton of time. He's 42 years old. I think to me, I would rather him see him do this and this be like, I got back in there. I was able to do it. Now I go back to commentating. I think the one thing I love about the way Tom Brady walked away is we didn't get to see him fall off of the cliff, off of the cliff, and no longer be able to do it. And I think that's what I would like for Rashad Evans.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm going to tap out. RC, you made the Brady. Listen, most of our great champions go out on their backs. It's just the way it is. I mean, Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, but the dude could barely throw the ball 20 yards. I mean, he barely could throw the ball. So he got to go out on top, but it wasn't because of him. Now, Rashad should do this, but only at this level. Let's not get too smart for ourselves or too tough. Now, the level wasn't the highest in this fight, and Rashad can always beat those types of guys. But let's not start to put him in there with absolute killers anymore, because with a name like Rashad Evans, those young, hungry lions start to call for you because they want to build themselves off of your name. So I'm going to tap in to see him compete at that level, but I'm tapping out to any super high-level mixed martial arts. Carper Jake.
Kevin Holland, known to be a jokester, was the target of a Twitter troll recently. The troll sent Kevin a message saying, "Even though you're a black belt, I'm positive I could submit you. Prove me wrong." Holland made an example of this troll by bringing him out to Texas, proving him wrong, and made him tap. Here's what Kevin had to say about that moment. So, DC, tap in or tap out Holland handling a Twitter troll in person rather than online?
Dude, I tap in, because sometimes you got to put people in their place. And Kevin Holland different. Like Kevin said, you show up in a different town, you don't know what people are going to do to you, and he went there and he got what he deserved. The way that people talk to athletes is so disrespectful at times that you could not imagine. So this kid going in there and training with Kevin, right? Because they see Kevin getting taken down by these professionals. They all think they can take him down. He just slayed. He sprawled that takedown out so easy, it was pathetic. And then Kevin Holland has already trained Ryan Clark. This isn't Kevin Holland fresh. He's been through an entire jiu-jitsu session, and he submits the kid. I absolutely tap in that sometimes if fans want to put themselves in that position, you go and you handle it. I did a show called Bully Beatdown way back in the day, and it was the same exact thing. Sometimes you got to put people in their place, man. These dudes are professionals for a reason.
So I tap in for this reason, that it wasn't handled with street justice, right? This was simply, if you want to pull up to the gym and meet me in my professional arena, if you're willing to do that, I will allow you to do that to show you. It wasn't disrespectful online. It wasn't one of those things where we pull up to a convenience store and throw hands. It was, you come into the cage, you get on the mat, and we will solve this that way. I think that's a better, even more professional adult way to handle it than something that gets ugly. So for me, I totally tap in on this.
And very rarely will a guy actually go, Ryan. So the kid went, but just going to get beat doesn't really garner respect from that professional athlete who you judge unfairly.
Stupid does. Like, I don't, bro, I believe I'm a tough dude. I don't try none of y'all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never, I'm never looking at, like, Rose Namajunas going, you know what? I think I could take Rose down. No. Like, I'm not. Like, I understand that this ain't my realm, bro.
it's crazy, man. It's crazy how, but for all those, Ryan, for all those, there are 100 that support, right? So just unfortunate, a lot of his voice is usually the negative one. So for all the people that support, we absolutely love you guys. Corporate Jake.
Guys, we've had some great versions of combat showcased on the show. So time to add another one. 3v3 mixed martial arts inside a cage with three officials. So RC, who would your team of three be, and tap in or tap out that your team would whoop DC's team?
Mm-mm. Oh, wow. I was going to pick DC on my team. Okay, so my team would be James Harrison and Deontay Wilder. That would be my team.
Oh, wow.
I feel like if I go in there with James Harrison and Deontay Wilder, I have a real good chance to beat DC, Islam, and Khabib, because that's going to be his team.
That is pure pandemonium. Now here's the question. Can you go and hit the other guy? Do you have a selected opponent? Oh, look, they're jumping it.
They're jumping each other. DC, this is a club fight, bro. This is the Tiger Bar in Baton Rouge in 1999, dog. I've had this happen before. Listen, this is nothing new. This is just a bar fight.
You got to keep your head on the swivel, Ryan. You know that one thing when y'all trying to guard somebody and you got to turn to find the ball? You got to always be doing this when you're in those types of fights. First off, I'm tapping in. And I'm taking Francis. I'm definitely taking Francis because Francis putting everybody to sleep with them little small gloves, especially if they don't know what they're doing, because he barely just threw. He's just throwing punches at times. And I'm taking Khabib. I mean, I'm taking Khabib up in that piece, man. Because, Ryan, if
Khabib nobody wrestled fight, in there. Nobody but wrestled,
if,
though.
But if Khabib can fight a bear, why can't Khabib fight a man? Hey, 29 have tried.
Friendly
29
bear.
Have fallen.
The bear was friendly.
29 have tried. 29 have failed against the Eagle of Dagestan, Khabib Nurmagomedov. That's who I'm taking, Ryan Clark, on my team. Me, Khabib, and Francis Ngannou against anybody. Because James Harrison will just jump on those big old tree trunk legs. He big. Deontay Wilder, Francis might be able to take him down. I mean, you know how it is.
DC, Debo is what we call him, is going to tackle you through the gate, bro. And I promise you, he's a better wrestler than Surreal Gone. He just gonna hold Francis down the whole time, and then me and Deontay gonna jump you, right? We gonna jump you, and if Khabib can't wrestle me, I'm just gonna cover my head like this long enough James and Deontay.
Wrestling is allowed, and I'm telling you, 20 seconds, Khabib Nurmagomedov submits Deontay Wilder, so he's eliminated out of the Royal Rumble. And then we turn our focus to you, and you got skinny legs, so I'm leg kicking you on the calf. I'm trying to affect
I'm
your
gonna
movement,
sprawl,
right,
bro.
Mark. You better
I'm gonna sprawl,
not a kick.
But it's been a great show, man.
He can't sprawl a kick.
It's Michael Chandler.
He can't sprawl a kick.
My team's gonna win.
This dude right here, man.
DC and RC.
Guys, we'll see
done,
you next
man.
Week.
That's
we will
DC,
see you
I'm
next
RC.
Week.
Bye.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.